The mechanic is in, our good buddy Bruce Beckeris from A1 Automotive over there in Moorhead. Well, we've got him for the next hour, and if you've got questions about your vehicle, old, new, it doesn't matter, you can give us a call at 701-237-5948. Toll free 1-800-880-5346, and you can also text in your questions to 35270. Let's get him on the line. Bruce, how are things going in your neck of the woods these days?
Hey, you know, things are pretty awesome. A lot of temperature out there making all those air conditioners work a little bit overtime, and believe me, we're seeing a few to take care of.
Well, I actually have a question for you. My wife asked me over the weekend, should I worry about my car overheating? And I said, I actually don't know the last time I heard of a car overheating.
We talked about that, actually. Jill and I talked about that when we were at Parking Lot Bingo.
Yeah, she was worried about it. Do modern cars overheat still, Bruce?
Not very often. There's got usually something's wrong if your car overheats in today's world. Of course, what's the most common reason would overheat? Low on coolant. But then other things can come into play, like cooling fans that don't turn on, that's probably the biggest thing. So usually they don't overheat. You know, you used to, in the 80s, you would have cars, if you ran the air condition a lot, it would seem like it would overheat. Police cars used to have that problem all the time, where they would leave them run for idle for hours and hours, and they would overheat. But that certainly doesn't seem to be near the issue now.
I suppose, unless if you're cranking to start your car, like getting out and doing it the Model T style, you probably are putting water in there. But no one puts water in cars anymore, do they?
Nope. And all antifreeze is an antifreeze. There's lots of different kinds of antifreeze out there. Specialty antifreezes, universal antifreezes. So if you're going to get antifreeze, you want to trust someone to get the right antifreeze for you, whether you're at the local parts store or whether you're Googling it. Make sure you're confident what antifreeze you're putting in there. The one thing about antifreeze is that there's a little bit of lubricant in there. When you just put water in the cooling system, no lubricant in it, and when winter comes, you forget, and then bad stuff happens.
Bruce is ready to take your calls. Any questions? 237-5948, 800-880-5346. Our car doctor is in, and Max is first up. Max, go ahead. You have a question for Bruce?
I have a 88 Chevy that surges at idle.
Okay, so every day you're just sitting there, and the thing, like, hunts. It goes 600, 800 RPM.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first thing we'd ask you is the check engine light on. Do you know that?
If it sits for a while, then it comes on and then it goes off right away.
Okay. So we have some things going on there. We're going to look for a vacuum leak. We're going to monitor what's called the throttle position sensor, and we're going to look at the fuel trims at idle. Once we know the things that are going on with fuel trims at idle, throttle position sensor, then we should be able to figure out why it surges at idle. Vacuum leak might be the most common reason.
Okay. We put a new throttle sensor in there.
And that didn't change anything?
Nope.
Did you read the codes at a little store with a code reader?
Nope.
Okay. Well, that's the first step. Either go to a trusted shop that will read the codes for you for free, or go to like a parts store. They'll read it. And then you can start searching on the internet for some clues, and you can still ask an expert like me if you'd like.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks, Max.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. You can call in now, 237-5948, 800-880-5346. Dumb hybrid car question in our text club. But when my Subaru hybrid runs out of gas, will it run on battery for a while?
That's a great question. In my opinion, I don't know. I mean, maybe a little while, but I don't know that for a fact. If you're running down the road, that's a great question. I don't know the answer.
I actually might have part of the answer to this.
I'm ready.
So my wife drives a Toyota RAV4 hybrid.
Yep.
And driving back from the lakes last year, my countdown of saying how far I can go with the fuel left in the
You were playing Survivor. Tank. That's yep. What my husband calls it. Yeah.
By the time I hit the Sabin exit, it actually went to zero. But I was able to get it into Moorhead still.
And so you know my survivor story. I went to Detroit Lakes on my motorcycle on Friday night. You might have saw me on the side of the road. And you know, at 169 miles, you'll walk on a victory.
Oh, no.
I was just at the airport at Detroit Lakes. And so, like a surfer, like a skateboard, I ran both feet till I got over the hill. And, you know, it takes a pretty big hill to make a motorcycle roll. But I got it rolled down the hill and rolled into Walmart, and I got some fuel.
Oh, good. And,
Survivor. You know, I love it. I played Survivor.
Yeah, you did.
I don't know
I
if I would.
I think you lost, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think you constantly want to do that for sure, because you're right. Putting a lot of stress on that battery no matter what. But it reminds me, Bruce, of in my younger days when I wanted to save every dollar possible, when we'd get to the top of a big hill, we would put the car into neutral and then just coast down and get as far as we could go. And then go a little further. It made a one-hour trip to the lake last about 3.5 hours, and I probably ended up wasting more fuel by getting it back up to that cruising speed than if I had just let it go.
Sure.
So anyway, can it run without gas? Maybe for a little while, according to JJ.
Yeah, but don't take my word for it, though. I'm not a car doctor.
All right, thank you.
I love that the text started, dumb hybrid car question, but what I mean, if it stumped everyone, is it dumb? Probably not.
I'm sitting right in front of a computer. I could ask Google.
You could ask the Google and see what it comes back from. You know, we haven't had a lot of rain, but I suspect that we will. We're just at the beginning of this season. But let's talk tires and hydroplaning. That's a topic that we like to cover every summer.
It is a good topic to cover. And just so you know, at my house, 1.6 inches at my house overnight. And when I came home from Detroit Lakes last night, the visibility was so bad in Holly that I thought I was in a snowstorm. That's how hard it was raining. And so the deal with tires and hydroplaning, when you're driving your car and the road looks perfectly smooth, like a hockey rink, there's a sheet of water on there. And if you don't have very much tread on your tires, the tires will virtually lift off the road, and now you're floating, way slipperier than ice. And so everybody thinks I only need new tires in the winter, but it's very important if your tires are worn down in the summer that if you hydroplane because of low tread, it's very uncontrollable. And it's very important if you have young drivers to don't say, well, it's the old car, it doesn't need tires. It needs tires if you don't have tread.
Absolutely. New tires will make such a big difference. We'll take more questions for the mechanic when we come back here. Bruce Beckeris is on the line from A1 Automotive and Transmission. You can call in now, 237-5948. You can also text in to 35270.
Here is a great question in our text club at 35270. If you want to get a question in with Bruce Beckeris, you definitely can. Bruce, if I keep my snow tires on all summer, what are the risks?
No risk. If you have studded snow tires, then you have a risk getting a ticket because you can't have those on in the summer. But regular snow tires, you can keep them on all summer. Some of the really expensive winter tires are definitely summer only. Blizzaks are ones that come to mind, who can't take a lot of temperature. But there are plenty of snow tires now with the snowflake rating that have great summer ratings too. So no big problem for taking off your leaving your snow tires on. If you have something like Blizzaks where they're not designed for summer, then I would take them off because they will wear fast.
And do a lot of people take off their snow tires, keep them, put on summer? It's like almost like a wardrobe. They just switch them back and forth.
There is a group of people that do that. We try to transition them into a better quality tire now that you don't need to do that. But, yeah, we still have a group of people that do that, especially people in Fargo, because North Dakota can still have studded tires. So I have a handful of people that still are putting studded tires on in North Dakota, which studded tires are amazingly cool if you can control yourself and not spin in your garage.
That's true.
Because it'll scratch it like crazy. Just so you know, just a little bit about this Prius or about these hybrid cars. A lot of cars will not run without fuel, even though they're hybrid, including the Chevy Tahoe and the Nissan. Prius owners have reported driving several miles with no gas in the tank, but the engine won't be able to reach speeds higher than 18 miles an hour. And Ford Fusion, if it's out of gas, will run, but run slow. So there's what we find out.
Bruce, on that same idea, so if someone has, let's say, a gauge in their car that tells them, gosh, you can go 225 miles before you need to fill up, does that need to be reconfigured every now and then? Do you have to, should you trust that gauge in your car?
If you trust it, then you've tested it. In my opinion, it's pretty darn accurate. And you know, you can tell how accurate it is by watching it go. You know, if you start going faster and the number goes down fast, you go, wow, it's adjusting for my speed. If it gets to be a trailer on the back, wow, it's adjusting for the trailer. If you see that, I feel that it's a pretty trustworthy way. Someone will always say, nah, that's okay. But in most of the cars that I read, including last night when I came home in the pickup, I looked at my gauge and says, okay, it says 118 miles. And by the time I got to where I was going, now we have 87 miles. I only need to go 60. I should be able to make it home. And I did make it home. So I do trust that gauge. And, of course, that's part of being the time management kind of guy that I am. I do trust things.
Let's get back to the phone lines here. MJ, you're on with Bruce Beckers. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a tire question for you.
Ready.
Okay. So I have low-profile rims, and I've been shopping online for tires.
Mm-hmm.
And we've found some. But how do you know if they're going to fit your low-profile tires on your car?
It's really easy to tell. It's really easy to tell. And so what I always say when you're going to try to figure out what tires, open up the door of the car. And
great.
On the door, it'll say exactly what size the tires are. And if that matches what's on the car, is that what's on the car? Or do you have some kind of aftermarket tires?
Nope. They're 235/50 R18.
Yeah, so but any 235/50, go ahead.
Even though they look like they have a taller sidewall and they're like truck tires and SUV tires?
The picture doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
The so picture doesn't mean anything. And okay. are you going to buy them like internet, Amazon, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of tires are you trying to buy? What's a brand?
Well, I was looking at, we first looked at Goodyear, Destination LE2s.
Sure.
And I wasn't sure they would fit on my Impala because they looked like they had a taller sidewall, and I didn't think they'd fit in the wheel well.
Yeah. Don't worry about the picture. There's only a few pictures out there. If the tire has the right number on it, it will fit.
Okay. Thank you, Bruce.
Yeah. Happy day. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Let's get back to the phone lines. Tom, you're on with Bruce. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a 2012 Dodge Ram 5.7 Hemi, and lately I find that the fuel stations aren't carrying. I'm supposed to use 89 octane, but now the station that I normally fill up at, the only 89 they have has the 15% ethanol, and my only other choice is to go to 87 with the 10%. Which one is the better or the less of the evils?
It's all of these cars should run on 87 octane. I mean, you know, even some small engine companies, you know, they say, well, this requires 91 octane, but all of their testing has been done with lower octane fuel. If you're looking for the correct fuel, the you know, if they're requiring 89 octane, I would always go to the 91 octane if I can't get to the 89. But if value is the thing, it should have no issue running 87 octane. I probably would not, unless it has an E85 gas cap, I wouldn't run E85. And you can usually tell that because it'll have a yellow gas cap.
Oh, okay, then. Thank you.
All right, good luck to you.
Someone in our text club, I have a 2005 Chevy pickup. A service airbag light came on. Do I need a new airbag? What is the cost to service? What's a new airbag cost? And what could possibly be wrong?
chances are you don't need an airbag. Really simple stuff here. When you get the code scanned, you can do this yourself at, you know, your local parts store, at a shop you can trust. They can go in there and they can look at to see what the code is. Now, when you get to the code, that's a clue to what's wrong. It's not what's wrong. It's a clue to what's wrong. Once you see where you can start testing, you can figure out. One of the things that we see that are common on this pickup, number one, crash sensors. Crash sensors are in the front. Sometimes they're in the side. And these impact sensors can go bad. If that's a straightforward code, pretty easy to check out. Other things, passenger presence codes, that has to do with the seatbelt retractor, or there's a thing in the cushion of the seat where it tells whether you sit in it or not. And the third thing is in the steering wheel, they have what's called spiral spring or clock spring. And when you turn the wheel around, there's this little rubbing spring in there that gives a connection, and that could be wrong. But in most cases, wherever you go, in an hour, they'll have a diagnose what it is, and then we can go forward and fix it.
Sounds good. If you have a question for Bruce Beckeris, the mechanic is in until 2 o'clock on KFGO. You can call in now, 237-5948, or send us a text, 35270. The mechanic is in on KFTO, taking all of your automotive questions. Bruce, should new antifreeze be mixed with water?
If it's antifreeze that needs to be mixed with water, so there's two kinds of antifreeze. Pre-mix, that means it's ready to go, or concentrated. And when concentrated antifreeze comes, in my opinion, it's always 50-50. Would I always read the bottle to be sure? Absolutely. But it'll either say pre-mixed or concentrated. If it's concentrated, you need to mix with water.
You know, back to our airbag question in the 2005 Chevy pickup, service airbag light came on. Do I need a new airbag? What is it? That question?
Mm-hmm.
Follow up, will it work until it's fixed?
The car will work, but if the airbag light is on, the airbag will not deploy.
Okay.
It will not deploy electrically.
The car will work.
Yeah, your car will work, but your airbag, if that light is on, it's telling you that airbag system is down. And that, I mean, you should get it fixed. I mean, airbags, even though some people say airbags don't save lives, airbags save lives,
yeah,
without a doubt.
My air conditioner is working intermittently. Possible diagnosis?
We're seeing some air conditioners that work intermittently, and we're seeing some relay problems where they run for a while and then they start working. That is one scenario where it's warm first and then you drive for a while and it gets cool. The other thing we're seeing on intermittent problems is that some days it's cold and some days it's warm and then it gets cold again. We see problems with blend doors, meaning the doors that blend the cold and the hot temperatures. And one thing you need to know about air conditioners, people don't really understand this, is that you have the heater coil in there where the hot is in the air box, and you have the air conditioning coil. And, of course, that water is going in the heat mode all the time. And then the air conditioner mode, when the compressor's on, the air conditioning compressor, that makes that cold. And then when you select, there's a door that goes warm, cold, warm, cold. And, of course, that's how the temperature works. And if something happens where that door is getting stuck right or left, so it's either all warm or all cold, that's when we have intermittent cooling problems. And then to add one more thing to make this more complicated, sometimes it's cold on the left and warm at the right, and those are another set of doors. Now, sometimes people think that that's all vacuum-operated, which it was in the 70s, but that's kind of went away, and all of these things are controlled by little motors that move these doors. And so not only motors are moving the doors, but the doors are actually breaking. So pretty easy to figure out what's going on. That's why you have intermittent air conditioning problems.
Bruce, I'm curious to know about this. So I think during the summer, some people are driving on gravel roads more often.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to replace the oil filter every single time we are driving down a dirt road?
You know, the driving on a dirt road should not affect the oil filter at all. air filters are affected by dirt being ingested through the air, the fuel injector, the carbureting system. But oil filters, that should be a sealed unit. You should be changing the oil filter every time you change oil, but it should have nothing to do with the dirt road.
All right. And then can you walk us through some warning lights that we might find on our dashboard?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The first clue about warning lights, if it's yellow, meaning caution, that is a situation where, you know, it needs attention, but not right now. If it's red, that means stop. If it's yellow flashing, that means emission damage is happening now. So yellow flashing is time to get something done, and red is time to stop, and just yellow check engine light, time to get it checked out soon. And of course, what's the exception to this brake light, the red light thing, is the brake light. Sometimes brake lights can be red and they can be bright or dim on the dash. And sometimes if you pull up the lever or the pedal and you push it down, if it gets brighter, then you can tell. If it's on bright right away and it doesn't change, that means the brake system is compromised. But if it's dim and when you pull up the lever it gets brighter, then that means that there's more of an electrical problem.
What about those people who have one of these warning lights? Like, let's say they get the red light,
yep.
Okay? Should they, obviously you say pull over, stop. If the red light persists, how do you make the determination between driving it into the shop versus getting a tow into the shop?
Well, it depends upon when the red light came on. If the red light came on going down the road and you looked at all the gauges and everything reads okay and the red light's on, I would stop and I would start doing some checking. I would probably check the oil. I would listen to see if you can hear it's hot. I wouldn't take the radiator cap off because no matter what, it's going to be hot there. So don't take the radiator cap off, but see if it smells hot. See if there's any noise. You know, start it up, see if there's any noise. If you feel comfortable enough to make a decision, you could probably drive a little bit, but I would be comfortable because if it's a red engine light, which shows either the temperature signal or the oil signal, you know, those are reasons for concern. Can they ever turn on with nothing wrong? Absolutely.
Okay, so to double down on my question earlier about cars overheating, so let's say you do have a situation where the, you know, you blow a coolant line or whatever happens to make your car's engine go up and you're getting close to that red line on your temperature gauge. What do you is it just a matter of getting the coolant line change and new coolant in there? Or I've heard that sometimes places recommend a fluid flush after that.
There's always reasons to have a coolant flush. Some people, there's some cars that coolant wears out, so it's part of routine maintenance. There's some cars that the coolant is such that it tends to corrode the aluminum components. That's a reason for a maintenance. If you're overheating, the first thing is to figure out the cause of overheating. If the radiator is plugged both internally or externally, that could be a reason for overheating. And so, as you were alluding to dirt and your oil filter, driving in a really dirty condition with your radiator, that can fill the radiator full of dirt. That can cause a heating problem. And somebody says, really? I can't hardly believe that. But if we deem that the radiator is full of dirt, sometimes you can just take the radiator out and either pressure wash it or blow it out with the air and get all the dirt that's pulled out of the radiator between those fins. And one thing I caution you, don't stick the pressure washer through the grill and try to do it because it'll just bend all the fins over. You need to use caution when you do this.
All right, let's head back to the phone line. Bruce, you're on with Chuck.
Hey, Chuck.
Hi. I've got a 2015 GMC Terrain with a four-cylinder engine. And I went a little bit of traffic, and I was kind of parked on just a slight hill. And when I took off again, it kind of stumbled, and it actually killed the engine. And it did that a couple times, and then we've been driving it again, and it hasn't done that. but then it did it for my wife the other day briefly, but there's no engine lights on or anything like that. I was wondering if there's a something in the transmission that causing that, a sensor.
Whenever you say there's a little stumble when you take off, you always, first of all, with a four-cylinder motor, we would start asking ourselves, did we have an engine misfire? And so the first thing is to try to figure out how we can duplicate that. And the second thing is to go for a ride if we can duplicate it and see, with the technology in these new cars, you can see misfire data, and we could see if we could feel this stumble, we could see if that is the case. Most likely, if you have a stumble taking off from a stop sign, especially if it's on lighter throttle, I would guess it's an engine misfire. That's a guess.
So that could be lots of different things, a coil factor.
You know, it could be. How many miles are on this thing?
Let's see. It's got a little over 100,000.
I mean, it might be as simple as it just needs spark plugs, but spark plugs last and last. I mean, we're not changing spark plugs like we did, you know, when our fathers had cars. We're not doing it like that. I mean, spark plugs last a long time, but certainly good, certainly easy to diagnose if we can make it do it, and certainly figure out if we can see it stumble on data. Then many times what we start in is we start moving things. We move spark plug from hole to hole, and we move coil from hole to hole, meaning cylinder to cylinder, to see if we can move the misfire to try to get a successful repair without just throwing parts at it.
Right, yeah. Well, it's like I said, it did it 1 week, and then it was like a week and a half before it did it again. Now it hasn't done it again, so that's the hardest part too, I suppose. Or will the computer show that the past history?
It might show it, yeah. It might show it. If it might be worth just a quick ride and just look to see if anything's going on, and you really, if you're going to somebody who you know, is wanting your business, usually they'll go for a little ride with you, and it's not a big deal.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much for calling.
Did we get to this AC blender question?
We have not yet.
Okay. What does it cost to fix an AC blender replacement?
So Blendor is what I'm sure they're asking about.
Oh, okay. I was like, I've never heard of a blender, but, you know, what do I know?
Blendor. Yep. And so it depends upon the car. Some cars are really easy, and you can fix from the outside, so they're inexpensive. And then some cars require replacement of the whole heater box assembly. That could require taking the whole dash out. And so pretty much on a case-by-case basis, we have to look at what door is bad and how is this car put together to see if we can do it. I know that Dodge pickups are having huge problems with the air. We call it the air box or the air housing, the heater housing, where they're actually breaking the doors right off on them. But there's a lot of Ford products and a lot of GM products where you can virtually just slip a little motor in and fix the Blendor motors. So they're easier to do and, you know, from our standpoint, better design, but who are we to say?
Bruce, you're going to get a kick out of this one. I sure did. This is in our text club. We're talking about a 2001 Chevy Venture and a 2005 GMC Canyon. Both have electric windows that don't work. Driver's windows, of course. Is that going to be spendy? And they end it with, I want my old-fashioned roll-down windows back.
Everybody wants their old windows back until they get them, and then they go, how do I get those windows down? They get their kids in their car, and they don't even know how to get the window down. We're crank? You have to be kidding me. Easy stuff to check out when you get to the shop. We get the first of all is to get the switches out, see if there's power there. Once we know if there's power there, then we'll get the door panel off and get in there to see if the motor's bad or if there's something wrong with the track. Usually around $300 is a good guess if we have to put a motor and a regulator in.
So here's a good question. If one motor goes out, do you think that it's just a matter of time before the other ones go out?
Nope, not at all.
Oh,
not
there you go. Fantastic.
Nope, not at all.
This person says they've got a 2014 F-150. My radio stopped working, but everything else still works. Radio won't even power on. Says entertainment unavailable at bottom of screen.
And, yeah, something's happened to the radio. Obviously, the first place to check is for fuses. And so if you get into your owner's manual and find where the radio fuse is and just go there and see if the fuse is bad. If the fuse is not bad, there's actually a place in Fargo that fixes radios, and that's where we would refer you to. And hope not to make anyone mad, but her name is Julie's Radio Ranch, and she's been around, even though she's a young lady, she's been around 100 years, and she can fix it up for you.
Okay, here's another one. This one is about a Kia Sorento, only a few years old. I've checked the fuses and changed the bulbs, but my low beams are not working.
Okay. And so if the low beams aren't working and you know the fuses are good and you know the bulbs are good, I would start to think maybe multifunction switch. So wherever the dimmer switch is on the, usually it has to do with the blinker lever, that's where the dimmer switch, that would be the first place we would start looking after we find out that the wiring's good and the bulbs are good.
This is The Mechanic Is In. We have a few more minutes. If you have a question, text in now to 35270, or you can call us at 237-5948.
We have time to get to the phone lines again real quick, Amy.
Yeah, let's
fantastic.
Do it.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
okay.
Do it.
Owen, you are on with Bruce Beckeris.
Yeah, say, I've got a light that comes on that one of my tires are low on pressure, and I checked the pressure with a gauge on the tire, and it's okay. I was just wondering what causes that problem.
Well, there's batteries in those little sensors, so the first thing we would start checking is what is the battery. So I don't know what kind of car you have, but normally what we see...
2008 Chevy.
What is it?
2008 Chevy.
2008 Chevy.
Impala.
And so normally the batteries can go bad in there. What we would do is we would get in there and put a scan tool on it, and we would see which sensors we can see. And if we can't see one sensor, it'll be easy to know exactly what the problem is. And then we can also check to make sure the tire sensors are in the correct location, because sometimes via tire rotation, sometimes the sensors can get out of position, and then all kinds of confusion starts.
Any estimate on cost?
If one tire sensor is bad and with insulation, around $140, $150.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Any more text questions?
Ask the mechanic, which diesel pickup is the best for towing a 24-foot camper, Ford, Chevy, or Dodge? Ooh. I think that's down to your personal opinion there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, all good. All good, whatever you like. I mean, diesel pickups are amazing to tow with. And just remember, it's already a powerful pickup. You don't need to make it more powerful. And what do we see? When you make a diesel pickup into something else, that's when the problems start.
All right, how about this one? In O2 Trailblazer, something is always draining the battery after it sits for a couple of days. Replaced the battery about 17 months ago. Didn't help. Maybe a relay stuck open?
Yep, something... We do like a voltage drop test. So we hook up a meter between the negative cable and the battery, and then we watch it when you shut off. And we need less than a half an amp draw or the battery will dead. And so how do we get down to that? We watch it for it to power down. If it doesn't power down, then we start pulling fuses out until we find out what the battery draw is.
Hey, Bruce Beckeris, thanks so much for another great Mechanic Is In segment. If they want to get a hold of you at A1 Automotive and Transmission, how do they do that?
You can always call us at 218-233-6161.
And your location, please.
You know, we're in Moorhead, just north of Menards at 2627 16th Avenue South.
Sounds good. We'll see you next month.
Yeah, well, I can't wait. Maybe in person.
Maybe.
I'd be looking forward to that.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bruce.